Over the next several days, she repeated the ultimatum enough times that I finally accepted that this was not an idle threat. She wasn't just blowing off steam, and the issue was not going away. I was sick about it. As pathetic as it sounds, Marley had become my male bonding soulmate, my near-constant companion, my friend. He was the undisciplined, recalcitrant, nonconformist, politically incorrect free spirit I had always wanted to be, had I been brave enough. The thought of giving him up seared my soul. But I had two children to worry about now, and a wife whom we needed. Our household was being held together by the most tenuous of threads. If losing Marley made the difference between meltdown and stability, how could I not honor Jenny's wishes? Each morning I opened the newspaper to the classifieds as if I might find some miracle ad. Seeking, wildly energetic, out-of-control Labrador Retriever, with multiple phobias. Destructive qualities a plus. Will pay top dollar. What I found instead was a booming trade in young adult dogs that, for whatever reason, had not worked out. Many were purebreds that their owners had spent several hundred dollars for just months earlier. An alarming number of the unwanted dogs were male labs. The ads were at once heartbreaking and hilarious, full of sunny euphemisms for the types of behavior I knew all too well. Lively, loves people, needs big yard, needs room to run, energetic, spirited, powerful, one of a kind. When I read fiercely loyal, I knew the seller really meant known to bite. Constant companion meant suffer separation anxiety, and good watchdog translated to incessant barker. And when I saw best offer, I knew too well that the desperate owner really was asking, how much do I need to pay you to take this thing off my hands? Part of me ached with sadness. I was not a quitter. I did not believe Jenny was a quitter either. Marley was nothing like the stately dogs both of us had grown up with. He had a host of bad habits and behaviors. He also had come a great distance from the spastic puppy we had brought home 2 years earlier. In his own flawed way, he was trying. Part of our journey as his owners was to mold him to our needs, but part also was to accept him for what he was. He was a part of our family, and for all his flaws, devotion such as his could not be bought for any price. I was not ready to give up on him. Even as I continued to make half-hearted inquiries about finding Marley a new home, I began working with him in earnest. I began rising at dawn, buckling Patrick into the jogging stroller, and heading down to the water to put Marley through the paces. Sit, stay, down, heel. Over and over we practiced. There was a desperation to my mission, and Marley seemed to sense it. The stakes were different now. This was for real. By the time I re-enrolled Marley in obedience school, he was a different dog from the juvenile delinquent I had first shown up with. Yes, still wild as a boar, but this time he knew I was the boss and he was the underling. This time there would be no lunges toward other dogs, or at least not many. No out-of-control surges across the tarmac, no crashing into strangers' crotches. Through 8 weekly sessions, I marched him through the commands on a tight leash. At our final meeting, the trainer, a relaxed woman who was the antithesis of Miss Dominatrix, called us forward. "Okay," she said, "show us what you got." I ordered Marley into a sit position, and he dropped neatly to his haunches. I raised the choker chain high around his throat, and with a crisp tug of the lead, ordered him to heel. We trotted across the parking lot and back, Marley at my side, his shoulder brushing my calf, just as the book said it should. I ordered him to sit again, and I stood directly in front of him and pointed my finger at his forehead. "Stay," I said calmly, and with the other hand I dropped his leash. I stepped backward several paces. His big brown eyes fixed on me. I walked in a 360-degree circle around him. He quivered with excitement, but he did not budge. When I was back in front of him, just for kicks, I snapped my finger and yelled, "Incoming!" He hit the deck like he was storming Iwo Jima. The teacher burst out laughing, a good sign. I turned my back on him and walked 30 feet away. The volcano was getting ready to blow. Then, spreading my feet into a wide boxer's stance in anticipation of what was coming, I said, "Marley?" I let his name hang in the air for a few seconds. "Come!" He shot at me with everything he had, and I braced for impact. At the last instant, I deftly sidestepped him with a bullfighter's grace, and he blasted past me, then circled back and goosed me from behind with his nose. "Good boy, Marley!" I gushed, dropping to my knees. "Good boy! Good boy!" He danced around me like we had just conquered Mount Everest together. At the end of the evening, the instructor called us up and handed us our diploma. Marley had passed basic obedience training, ranking 7th in his class. So what if it was a class of 8 and the 8th dog was a psychopathic pit bull? I would take it. Marley, my incorrigible, untrainable, undisciplined dog, had passed. I was so proud, I could have cried. There was still one piece of unfinished business between Marley and me. I needed to break him of his worst habit of all, jumping on people. It didn't matter if it was a friend or a stranger, a child or an adult, the meter reader or the UPS driver. Marley greeted them the same way, by charging at them full speed, sliding across the floor, leaping up and planting his 2 front paws on the person's chest or shoulders as he licked their face. What had been cute when he was a cuddly puppy had turned obnoxious, even terrifying for some recipients of his uninvited advances. I had tried without success to break him of jumping up, using standard dog obedience techniques. The message was not getting through. Then a veteran dog owner I respected said, "You want to break him of that? Give him a swift knee in the chest next time he jumps up on you." "I don't want to hurt him," I said. "You won't hurt him. A few good jabs with your knee, and I guarantee you he'll be done jumping." It was tough love time. Marley had to reform or relocate. The next night when I arrived home from work, I stepped in the front door and yelled, "I'm home!" As usual, Marley came barreling across the wood floors to greet me. He slid the last 10 feet as though on ice, then lifted off to smash his paws into my chest and slurp at my face. Just as his paws made contact with me, I gave one swift pump of my knee, connecting in the soft spot just below his ribcage. He gasped slightly and slid down to the floor, looking up at me with a wounded expression, trying to figure out what had gotten into me. He had been jumping on me his whole life. What was with the sudden sneak attack? The next night, I repeated the punishment. He leapt, I kneed. He dropped to the floor, coughing. I felt a little cruel, but if I were going to save him from the classifieds, I knew I had to drive home the point. "Sorry, guy," I said, leaning down so he could lick me with all 4 paws on the ground. "It's for your own good." The third night when I walked in, he came charging around the corner, going into his typical high-speed skid as he approached. This time, however, he altered the routine. Instead of leaping, he kept his paws on the ground and crashed headfirst into my knees, nearly knocking me over. I'd take that as a victory. "You did it, Marley! You did it! Good boy! You didn't jump up!" And I got on my knees so he could slobber me without risking a sucker punch. I was impressed. Marley had bent to the power of persuasion. The problem was not exactly solved, however. He may have been cured of jumping on me, but he was not cured of jumping on anyone else. The dog was smart enough to figure out that only I posed a threat, and he could still jump on the rest of the human race with impunity. I needed to widen my offensive, and to do that, I recruited a good friend of mine from work, a reporter named Jim Tolpin. Jim was a mild-mannered, bookish sort, balding, bespectacled, and of slight build. If there was anyone Marley thought he could jump up on without consequence, it was Jim. That night, Jim rang the bell and walked in the door. Sure enough, Marley took the bait and raced at him, ears flying back. When Marley left the ground to leap up on him, Jim dealt a withering blow with his knee to Marley's solar plexus, knocking the wind out of him. The thud was audible across the room. Marley let out a loud groan, went bug-eyed, and sprawled on the floor. Marley got to his feet, caught his breath, and greeted Jim the way a dog should, on all four paws. If he could have talked, I swear he would have cried uncle. Marley never again jumped up on anyone, at least not in my presence, and no one ever kneed him in the chest or anywhere else again. One morning, shortly thereafter, I woke up and my wife was back. My Jenny, the woman I loved who had disappeared into that unyielding blue fog, had returned to me. As suddenly as the postpartum depression had swept over her, it swept away again. She was strong, she was upbeat, she was not only coping as a young mother of two, but thriving. Marley was back in her good graces, safely on solid ground. With a baby in each arm, she leaned to kiss him. She threw him sticks and made him gravy from hamburger drippings. She danced him around the room when a good song came on the stereo. Sometimes at night, when he was calm, I would find her lying on the floor with him, her head resting on his neck. Jenny was back. Thank God, she was back.